You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking this hour about power, access to power for most of us here in Southeast Michigan. That means a relationship with DTE, a pretty big for-profit company that provides power to our homes. That relationship has been fraught for a long time, especially for people who struggle to pay their bills. A new report in ProPublica shows that during the pandemic, when even more of us were struggling, DTE engaged in hundreds of thousands of shutoffs. We're talking about why that happened, but also talking about what a different model would look like, what a different approach to making sure that everybody has access to power might look like. And that's where our next guest enters the conversation. Johanna Bozua is executive director of the Climate and Community Project Think Tank. She wrote a piece titled, COVID-19 Makes Clear Energy and Water Are Public Goods. That piece appeared in The Hill. Johanna, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So let's talk about why our utilities, some of them at least, are under for-profit models and not under public control. Why are things like heat, water, and electricity not made public goods everywhere in our country?
Oh, man. Well, that's a really good question. And it really depends on the type of utility. Water, for instance, 88% of our water systems in the United States are held publicly. But if you put that in contrast with electricity, only 28% of our electric utilities are either publicly owned or cooperatively owned. And that has a lot to do with when these utilities started to show up. Water utilities and sewage systems had already started. They've been around for a long time. They are these small municipal systems that the private sector didn't really have their eyes on. Whereas in contrast, electric utilities were really this new commodity that were coming in with Thomas Edison that they commodified. And they created these massive electric holding companies that really took control over the electricity provision in the towns. But when we started to see that push back was when they started to extort ratepayers in a lot of ways, and that people started to realize that this was really crucial to their daily lives now. Electricity had become part of the fabric of the United States. And coming up to the New Deal, that was when we started to see communities fight back against these private electric utilities that were taking their money and saying, hey, we could be doing this a different way. We should actually have ownership over these assets, over these wires that are going through our town. Mm-hmm. And that's why in the New Deal, actually, FDR created the Rural Electrification Administration, right, that also helped to bring electricity to so much of the United States where private utilities would not go. And listening into one of your listeners earlier talking about a co-op in Michigan, those types of co-ops are across the entire country and were really crucial to electrifying rural America.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about how this all changed during the pandemic, at least the thinking about it, I think, changed during the pandemic as people were more desperate for, for money, first of all, but then for the things that money buys, which in many cases is, utilities. Are there more places that are thinking about putting energy and water into the hands of public control because of moratoriums and other measures that we took during the pandemic to protect people?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. This has really entered into people's consciousness in a whole new world because that pandemic and the corresponding economic crisis really exposed people to just how unacceptable and unfair their energy system was. And the fact that I think there was some reporting by the Center for Biological Diversity that showed that families had their power cut cut nearly a million times between July 2020 and 2021. And that they were receiving over $1.25 billion in government bailouts at the same time. So that really enlivened the conversation. It was really clear, like, the experience that people were having on the ground of households being shut off. And we saw really a surge of activism on this. And two campaigns that I'll pull out for you are actually in the state of Maine. There is a campaign right now that is gaining substantial bipartisan traction to take over the entire state's utility. There's ongoing legislation and now a ballot measure to actually kick the investor-owned utility out. And similarly, we're looking in New York State already actually has a public utility there called the New York Power Authority that they're saying, hey, now we could actually use this utility to provide energy for all of New York State and actually similarly kick out the investor-owned utilities there.
We're talking about the idea of removing the for-profit context in which we relate to things like utilities, energy, water, all of these things that we use as fee-for-service. We're talking with Johanna Bozua, who's Executive Director of the Climate and Community Project Think Tank. She wrote a piece in The Hill titled, COVID-19 Makes Clear Energy and Water Are Public Goods. I want to hear from you as well. What do you make of organizations that own our energy in this country? Do you think we ought to rethink that and make them more accessible to people by making them public goods? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page or to Twitter, put comments there, and we can work you into the conversation. A couple more social media comments. Michael says, why are we messing with these companies, especially in Southeast Michigan, where our utilities have failed us and killed us multiple times in the past 10 years? He says it's a good idea to make utilities a public good. Diane on Twitter says it's also a good idea to make them public goods. Along those lines, I'd like to see gas companies get flipped to thermal companies. They stop moving and leaking gas and instead make loops that deliver ground heated water to heat exchangers in houses. I worry that the Michigan Public Service Commission mandate, not including decarbonization, is a dead end. Let's go back to the phones here. Harry in Sterling Heights. Harry, what's on your mind?
Yes, great subject. I was an econ major back many years ago at Wayne State, and one thing I learned about investment in development and research and development for major corporations. And back then, the big three weren't noted for doing that. Obviously, they never made electric cars, but they made a statement that the utilities are one of the least profound investors in research and development in their products. You know, they've been making electricity the same way for how many years? You know, it's like the car companies. You know, how many years we've been making for gas never changed until, you know, Elon Musk came along. So, yeah.
It's a great question, Harry. Johanna, what's your response to his question here?
Yeah, well, I think what really comes out in that response is just this need to be thinking about the future of our energy system, right? Like, we need to be thinking about what happens next. And they have utility companies like DTE, like Southern Company, are stuck in an old way of doing things. They're very fat and happy operating as they do based off of fossil fuels and not thinking about electrification, for instance, of our transportation systems. And they are actively pushing against renewable energy and the energy transition. We've seen, you know, millions of dollars poured into lobbying to stop things like renewable energy standards, like rooftop solar, all of these things that can actually support us in having a renewable energy on the grid and also to make sure that we can live on a livable planet. And that's really because they are far more interested in the status quo and providing money back to their shareholders in the ways that they have been doing for hundreds of years now.
Vernon, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go next to Jack in Highland Park. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And Johanna, good to hear your voice as well.
I
was calling in because I wanted to mention that there are actually two efforts happening in Southeast Michigan right now for public power. There's a huge growing campaign in Ann Arbor to explore this. But in parallel, on kind of the most opposite end of the spectrum demographically, there are a number of Highland Parkers now organizing for public power in a city that is the opposite in terms of size, resources, and demographics.
Mm-hmm.
That has been continually passed over for infrastructure improvements. And I just, you know, I wanted to call and raise that up, that communities basically across the entire breadth of identity and experience in Southeast Michigan are like actively working for this stuff.
Mm.
And there are huge opportunities for the state of Michigan and local governments to actually really support these efforts and really support these alternatives. With DP filing another huge rate hike immediately on the heels of the pandemic, clearly things are just not going to get better under this model unless we start seeing some real change in what they're pressured to do.
Jack, I'm really glad you called and referred to those things, especially what's going on in Highland Park, which I think is fascinating right now because it's a community that does have a lot of needs, and those needs aren't being met by either the water system that we all rely on here, DWSD or GLEWA, and by DTE. Johanna, I've got about 30 seconds left, but I want to make sure you get a chance to respond to what Jack's saying here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the work that's being done in Highland Park is exactly the type of community resurgence we're seeing, people banding together and showing that there is this alternative path and that like we can actually govern our utilities. This is something that is well within our capacity and that there's a huge amount of organizing that's happening on the ground right now to redefine what a utility means to its community.
Yeah. Okay. Johanna Bozo, great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you so much, Stephen.
It's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk with the National Urban League president about the state of voting rights in this country. Not a great state right now. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.